Welcome everyone to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community, plus a live Q&A that you can't find anywhere else. It's January 24th, 2024. My name is Eric Osterman, and I'll be your host. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator for startups that helps teams who are overwhelmed with AWS. We do this by using our over 200 plus Terraform modules that have been battle tested and downloaded over 100 million times. No matter where you find yourself on this journey, we are here to help your startup launch better products faster, free up your bandwidth for innovation, so you can nail your value delivery every time. So if you or your team has been banging your head against the wall with underperforming infrastructure, just head over to cloudposse.com/quiz. Again, cloudposse.com/quiz. Answer a few quick questions and we'll chart a roadmap for success free. You'll get to meet directly with me and we'll work through your problems to see if we can really help you out or not. So how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format is informal. Engage as much as you'd like. Ask questions. If you're curious about any of our open source tools or modules, go for it. For those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Go to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours to join us live. Now, I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's Office Hours valuable, please share it with your team. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse. Again, youtube.com/cloudposse to find the latest recording, or maybe send us a short testimonial about the value you're getting in Slack. Just go to slack.cloudposse.com. Remember, we're not simply creating content here. We are building a community, and I can't do that. We can't do that without you. Thanks. And here, announcements. All right. So, start to a new year, doing some housekeeping that we should have done long ago. We are updating our organization community files. These are called the community health files. If you're not aware of them, these are files like code of conduct, contributing, funding, governance, security, and support. What's cool about it is once you have added those files, they appear throughout your GitHub organization. For example, if you go to Terraform AWS components, you have these tabs now. So you can click on the code of conduct to see, the community guidelines that we ascribe to and want everyone to follow. The license of the project, which, is relative to the repository, and a security advisory on how to submit vulnerability reports and so forth. What the process looks like and so forth. Then if you go to say create an issue, for example, a bug report here, you have these helpful resources on the side. Here it also shares that support.md file, this is the contributing file. So how to go about contributing, support. So how to get support. The code of conduct, which I showed you, in the security policy. So all of that stuff. So those files live in this special repository in your organization called .github, and should be tailored to your organization and how you do open source. The other thing related to this is we are doing a slow rollout of updated formatting for our repositories. We are adding banners. If you want to add nifty banners to your projects, it's super easy. We released a GitHub action. Let's see here. That generates screenshots. So it's the screenshot action in the Cloud Posse GitHub screenshots organization. And all you need to do is, for example, create a folder with some HTML and some inline CSS. And then you can point the GitHub action to that. So if I go over to GitHub action workflows and this test.yaml here, this is reading that file and outputting an image of that screenshot with these dimensions. You can inject some CSS or rewrite some text on the HTML if you need to, for example, injecting the repository name into it. That'll commit a file. That workflow will commit a file to the repository with a banner like this, and you can do whatever you want. So great way to differentiate yourself if you are doing open source. The other thing, if you're not aware, GitHub probably 2 years ago released the ability to have organizational profile pages. So this is a great way if you want to spruce up your organizational profile page, or you as a developer, if you want to have a really nice profile image or banner, you can use that screenshot for that. So we've developed this banner for our organization that highlights that. Cool. Any questions on the screenshot action?
I am going to be checking that out later this week. Thanks, Eric.
Sure thing. Yeah, you do a lot of open source too, I think, right?
Yeah, definitely. Our repos have a long way to go, but you folks are definitely the golden standard from what I can tell. So thank you.
Yeah. You know, you plant seeds and it takes a while for it to grow. Found this. Let's see. So those were the community and organizational files. Also, just a request, if you are active in our community and use our open source, I value your feedback. So please have a look at those community files and let us know if there's something missing there. So there's been a lot of these projects over the years, open source status page sites, self-hosted. I always used to say statuspage.io, obviously before they were acquired. Man, that's the one startup I would have really loved to found because it's so simple and just seems like a cash cow to host status page for companies when they're down and demonstrates its value. Well, then again, there's a whole bunch of people who don't want to pay for it because it is so simple. And here's an example of a simple self-hosted version using modern frameworks to do that.
Yeah.
What was that?
I was just going to say, yes, although this isn't all that useful if something, the same infrastructure is down that hosts your status page because you've got something down in your infrastructure.
Yeah. Pro tip, do phase shifting. So make sure you put this on a different cloud provider that they themselves aren't hosted on that same provider you're using. For example, if you deploy this on Heroku, but Heroku's on AWS, doesn't really help you if AWS is having problems. So, use GCP and AWS or AWS and Azure, or vice versa, just so these things stay up. Even AWS has been burned. Their own status page was hosted in some way on the same infrastructure as all of AWS, and they weren't able to update their status page when AWS was having problems.
That was my tongue-in-cheek comment that I was making. Yes.
Yeah.
Does this do pinging, the probing as well? Or is this just a status page?
I haven't researched it beyond this.
Of course.
So yeah, I'm not sure.
I know one of the other popular ones was Numa, but yeah.
So it looks like it does have real-time monitoring. So it probably does have pinging. To me, a status page isn't about that, though. To me, a status page is about getting that information in from your monitoring systems that things are down. So if you're using Pingdom, getting it from there. If you're using Datadog, getting it from there, et cetera.
Sure. Yep, that makes sense. It looks like it does a little bit of both based on this.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
One thing I like about this implementation, I briefly took a look at it, is that it has localization settings so that all the incident statuses and everything else you see in your own local time zone when you look at it, which is a lot easier. Like I find every time I'm looking at AWS's or our major ones, I'm doing all the UTC calculations 20 times to understand what the incident was, when it started, when it ended, when they did this, when they did that. Now it actually is right there for you in your own local time zone, which makes it easier.
That's cool. Also nice little badges. Great to have in your repos, also embeds. So while you should have a separate status page, you might want to, for all but the worst situations, you might want to embed part of those statuses on your site. If you have a great uptime, why not put it on your marketing page? This is real time. We have, 99.999% uptime. So
you can actually put in an if statement and check to see what your trailing 90 days of history has been. And if an incident shows up, you can take it off of your marketing page automatically.
Exactly. All right, so that's cool. Let's see here. Next one. Oh yeah, another announcement from Cloud Posse. So we maintain a public repository of all of our Terraform root modules. We call them components, which are opinionated root modules, implemented in the Cloud Posse manner. We just upstreamed one that we've been using at several customers for Glue. So this is a collection of components to provision Glue, and it works really well with Atmos, so our way of managing configurations. And what's nice about this is it's built around the fundamental building blocks of Glue. So it's all just pure configuration at this point. If you follow this pattern, you don't need to write additional Terraform code to deploy it. And each of these individually have documentation, for example, of the stack configuration that you would use to configure that. Made me think about something else. Yeah, guess that was it. All right. Then the other announcement is last week we announced new features in Atmos, specifically around what was it? I think it was, where was it? Forget where the screenshots were. Thought it was just in here. But anyways, if you go to github.com, Cloud Posse, Atmos. Nope, wasn't there either. We have screenshots of it somewhere here. Looks like we need to promote those more throughout. We added the interactive elements for navigating stacks and components. Well, we just added that for workflows too. And that screenshot, let's see, did it make it in here? Unfortunately, not there either. So, oops. I will check with Andre, but here's what that looks like. So now, if you have that workflows configured in Atmos, very easy to surface those, navigate it based on the manifest, the commands within that manifest, and then what will happen if you execute that. And then if you hit enter on that, it will actually go execute that workflow. Again, our first foray into some of these UI improvements. Expect a lot more in this area so that the tool becomes easier to use for newcomers and advanced people alike. And that's in Atmos 1.55. So weird. Are those screenshots? I swear they were here. Hey, Aaron, I see you raised your hand.
Sorry, I came late. Atmos is a Cloud Posse product.
It is. It's one of our tools for managing configuration.
Okay. Thanks.
Yes. So I'll post that in the chat here. Oops. Or not. Where's the every? There we go. No. How do I? When you have too many participants in the channel, it's hard to select in the drop down to send it to everything. And I don't even see it in the list. Oh, I guess I won't be chatting.
It now says meeting group chat. It changed from everyone to meeting group chat in that drop down.
Oh, okay. Let's see here. And then the list is not even sorted, it's in totally random order. Oh, meeting group
Yeah.
Stop there. Okay, there we go.
I hit that same limitation when they changed that that UX. Like I don't remember when that was, but not that long ago. So
That was a nice thing you brought to my attention that now Zoom has a status bar icon if you're on OS X or Mac that lets you change your camera easily and do the obvious, the most common little operations like you're changing your microphone, seeing what you're sharing and so forth.
yeah, and stop sharing is my most favorite one because I can never find where that Zoom window went once I started sharing. So I'm glad they did that.
That's a good one. Cool. Next announcement is a small one. You know, we've been following a lot of announcements that's coming out of gov.uk. They have a lot of awesome open source on their GitHub about the platform that they've built for various entities within the UK government. So they have a write-up here on how they migrated Postgres database, leveraging services like DMS with minimal downtime. So thought that was an interesting technical write-up. I came across this post this morning, which I really want to advertise. I think we should syndicate some of this, you know, in our own documentation. I thought this was a great write-up of a lot of recommendations for how to write highly reusable Terraform root modules. And okay, they also talk about Cloud Posse, so they must be pretty inspired by what we do. But it's a great summary of best practices.
And you can't link that URL in our chat for some reason?
Oh no, I can now. Matt helps me find
Okay.
the way of doing that. And we'll also post all these links afterwards, but yeah, I'll post that here.
Post it
Definitely
in the
feel
cloud.
free to upvote anything that you like there.
Where would you be posting it in a Slack org?
Oh, I just put it in the Zoom chat, but we'll also be sharing all links in the office hours Slack channel
Okay.
in Sweet Ops
Leave it there.
Slack team. Yeah. All right. Next one was something that I caught in passing, which is kind of interesting. Somebody asks if this TF controller project is still alive. Look, there's been so many of these Kubernetes Terraform controllers out there. Most of them are started by weekend warriors. Some of them have been started by actual companies. And you know, this was probably one of the more promising endeavors to do that. I mean, Weaveworks invented GitOps with Flux. Let's say conceptually it's always been there, but they put a name to the they labeled it, they put a name to the term or the practice. They have some great products, including Flux, that do it. So I was a concerned to see this post that, you know, is the project still alive? But then this person who responded here is sharing some other details that apparently Weaveworks as a company is having some trouble, which is pretty sad because, I mean, Flux is arguably one of the best alternatives to Argo CD. Now we use Argo CD, but it's good always to have competition. And I hate to see open source companies struggling. So sad to see or hear this news. Does anyone know anything more about this?
I wasn't across any. I wasn't across your situation. Is this like financial troubles that the current company's having, or is this like a lawsuit from HashiCorp? I don't know if anyone has any insight.
There's a lawsuit from HashiCorp.
Oh no, I'm just speculating.
Oh, okay. Pure speculation. Okay.
Yeah, no, pure speculation. I wasn't sure if it's financial troubles. It sounds like you just highlighted the legal entity has issues, but nothing
Yeah,
there.
though it says that you can't go into details, but if you really want to know more, as a pointer, check out LinkedIn. Everyone's looking for a job. Maybe that's an ex gross exaggeration. Who knows? You know, words like everyone are often thrown around.
It's not an exaggeration. I'll just say
Oh, really?
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. That's really interesting. Whew. All right. Aaron, I saw you had your hand up.
Oh, sorry, I just didn't lower it from last time. Never mind.
Okay. No worries.
Is WeaveWorks the only company behind Flux as well? Or is there, are there more, is it a collaboration now?
Isn't Flux in the CNCF?
I think it
Oh,
is,
okay.
yeah.
It
Never
is.
mind.
So yeah, so it's worth mentioning that it's fully graduated, so it probably doesn't put the future necessarily in jeopardy of Flux as a product, because in order to reach maturity, it has to show a certain amount of commitment and contributions, I believe. So obviously, it helps to have a corporate backer like WeaveWorks driving all that forward.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens. I mean, I'm sure there's some contributor requirement for CNCF, but I think like Calico is like the main contributor behind their project for like Cilium. There's a company behind it that's driving majority of the development. So we'll
Yeah.
be interesting to see if yeah, what happens, I guess. I haven't been tracking FluxCD. I'm using Argo as well. So
Yeah, I think WeaveWorks now has shifted to their primary, or maybe sole, I don't know, but their primary way of earning income is hosted Flux, and I've heard some things that they're having some financial difficulties as well. So I don't know how true that part is, but I can confirm that there are tons of WeaveWorks engineers that are looking for jobs.
So I assume this, so Flux, TF Controller, and Flannel is all from them, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it wasn't across even the Flux hosted option. That's good to know.
That's the UI element, right? So otherwise, Flux is just purely console based and there's no visual front end, while Argo has the visual front end, and not really a hosted option. What were you saying,
Yeah,
Matt?
I think. No, I was just going to say, I think they own a bunch of things. They own EKS control, the what's that, the streaming database, Cortex, that streaming database. I think like they started all those different projects. So there's a whole bunch of things that they're responsible for.
Oh no, I was working on Cortex just yesterday. So it sounds like you might need to swap that out. You're talking about the Cortex project, I think, right? The Prometheus aggregator in Courier. It's like a Thanos option.
No, it's a yeah, a time series database, basically. Yeah.
Oh.
Luckily, they're all open source though, so hopefully, like if something did happen, they would, continue in the CNCF.
Oh yeah, here's open source.
Oh, there you go. EKS Cuddle. That's the one I was thinking
Oh
of.
yeah,
That,
really? I mean, this is the one
yeah,
that
that's,
I've gotten behind too.
yeah,
So
a lot of people use that.
I think this is the AWS though canonical way of doing EKS.
It
If that,
is. Yeah, like that's in the documentation and tells you to do that. So, but I also think this is like hosted or somehow part of CNCF too.
yeah. Yep.
I
All
feel
right.
like this is a reason to worry, but I guess I'll see how the next couple of weeks go or the next couple of months. Hopefully, there's not a whole lot of major breakage that pops up.
Well, and, these things can go on for a while. This is just rumblings of trouble, and there's inertia, so
Sure.
immediately concerned. All right, and because no office hours is complete without another announcement of a Terraform private registry, the latest Terraform private registry for 2024 is TERRAC, a minimal private module registry for Terraform and OpenTofu. So it's just remarkable how many of these private registry products are coming out. Good, I guess, fun little side projects. And I don't know what the differentiator is with this one. Cool. All the announcements I had. Any other announcements? Something caught your eye this week? AWS seemed. pretty AWS news seemed nothing special.
Yeah, on the AWS side, I think before the recording started, 1.29 dropped. And then I think OpenTofu released their first patch release a few hours ago. So 1.6.1.
See here. Yeah, 1.6.1. Right, cool. Yeah, Michael mentions we did mention that OpenTofu went GA about 2 weeks ago with an official release, which is this 1.6 release. So yeah, hence this is the first official patch release of 1.6.
I was going to ask, in your opinion, is it time to switch to OpenTofu from Terraform? Like, are all the supporting tools available? Things like an equivalent for TFEnv and GitHub Actions, published GitHub Actions, and things like that?
Yeah, I mean it's a fair question. I think it really depends on like what tools you use. Like Cloud Posse doesn't use TFM, so it's not a it isn't or never was a consideration. In terms of GitHub Actions support for it, it's supposed to be more or less a drop-in replacement at this stage to HashiCorp Terraform. So long as the GitHub Actions support changing the binary, or you have some way of, aliasing your binary OpenTF to Terraform, then all of those should just work out of the box. So I don't think from that side there's much. There was a interesting discussion thread here on Reddit posted about 7 hours ago now, which has, a which. Is interesting feedback. It does. It's not overly positive, but it's not overly negative. It sounds like a lot of people professionally would still continue using Terraform and then personally start dabbling with OpenTF. I guess, as a nascent fork, it has some growing up to do. People are naturally skittish about adopting something that their business depends on, altruistically. So it has to prove itself.
Yeah, I think right now, honestly, my personal opinion is that the only people that should be using it now are the people that have to because they're violating the license, for mainline Terraform. I think right now the only differentiator between OpenTofu and mainline is it's open source still. Because the features haven't diverged, or it hasn't proven to grow apart, or anything like that. So I think the responsible thing to do would be, if you're still legally allowed to use mainline Terraform, do so. If you're not, now you have an alternative that gets you out of the legal hot water. But I think that as we glance into the not too distant future, there's going to be a divergence of features. No matter how hard the maintainers try, there are going to be things that they can't, that are only going to work with something in HashiCorp's ecosystem or whatever in order to make this work. And I think that then it becomes a much harder decision. But until that point, only do it if you have to legally. That would be my personal view on this whole thing.
And is OpenTofu's stated purpose and goal to maintain feature parity and command line equivalence with Terraform?
That's definitely their initial stated goal. I think that's going, again, my personal opinion, I don't have insight into it or anything else, but I think long term that's going to be very difficult to do as the two organizations maintaining it will have different priorities and different goals for doing different things. So
Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks.
yeah. As an example, I think are you going to bring up they want to use interpolation and backend configurations as an example in OpenTofu. As soon as they do that, you'll no longer be able to just roll back to mainline Terraform because you can't use interpolation in backend configurations as an example. Like
Yeah.
that,
But that's a really essential feature that we've been missing for years.
It is.
Yeah.
I agree. I'm not saying what they're going to do is bad. I'm just saying right now, as we sit on January 24th, there's no compelling reason to switch. But I think that's going to change in the not too distant future. But not right now, I don't think there is, other than license, in my
Okay,
opinion.
thank you.
Yeah, I think I agree with what Matt has said, and these will be really compelling reasons to switch to OpenTF, because then there's a real differentiator that moves the needle. But it'd be really cool to have parameterized sources, for example, so users of modules can try to test their luck by updating versions if they absolutely need that new feature or bug fix, even though the maintainer maybe hasn't released, pinned the module to that new version. Similarly, backends supporting variables would be really nice. So we, most companies doing anything with Terraform at a particular scale will probably be generating those backend configurations either through command line arguments passed to Terraform or by generating the backend config, which is the approach Cloud Posse has taken. All right. So that was that announcement. That was this announcement. Cool. Any other? Any other announcements? All right, let's jump over to Q&A. All right, so this is a portion of office hours, open-ended, open mic. If you have anything you're grappling with, any questions, struggles, observations, philosophical questions related to our trade, fire away. Aaron, yeah, fire away.
Sorry for raising my hand too much and hogging all the attention, but
Oh, you can just speak up too, by the way. You don't necessarily have to raise your
thanks.
hand, but good manners are always good too. So.
Yeah, I am engaged in building up a set of GitHub repos and GitHub Actions and Terraform configurations to allow my client's engineers to self-service Lambda, AWS Lambda-based little infrastructure stacks and then deploy them in arbitrary environments integrated with other stacks and things. And one of the kind of sticky points is how do we allow a engineer to create an ECR, an Elastic Container Registry repository, arbitrarily named? How do we give them permissions or give their GitHub Action or GitHub repo permissions to create such a thing in AWS, but not mess with other repos? Like, I'm not aware of a way to configure an IAM policy that says you can create a repo, but then you can destroy that repo or modify that repo, but you can't modify or destroy or change any other repos. And I'm just wondering if anyone has any ideas about. Is there some sort of a canned Lambda that facilitates this, or is there some IAM feature that I'm not aware of that allows you to do something like this? Seems like kind of a chicken and egg problem, a security chicken and egg problem.
Yeah, there are a couple ways to approach it. We have a way that we do it at Cloud Posse. I've thought about a similar problem that we are going to have starting later on this year is we plan to be publishing a lot of our components as OCI images. And at that time, I think it makes less sense for us to Terraform each one of those registries and instead just have a GitHub action that actually goes ahead makes that ECR on the fly dynamically. But I think from the permission standpoint, first, you're aware of GitHub OIDC. You're using that. for your actions and workflows.
Yeah,
Okay.
absolutely.
And then you can then restrict which repo can assume which roles, right?
Of course. Yeah.
So then you can probably restrict one repo from being able to modify any other ECR registry, so long as you allow those registries to follow it like a similar naming convention. Typically, we always have a one-to-one relationship between the service and the GitHub repo. Now that falls apart if you're using that falls apart ever so slightly if you're using like a monorepo with multiple services in it. Is that what you're using?
No, one of my principles has been to break up as much in things into as many repos as possible. Like, you know, each microservice stack has its own repo, and then environments that compose those into a deployed, you know, set of things have a different repo. Yeah.
Yeah. So a couple ideas on that would be if you want to do this natively in Terraform, you can also set now properties on GitHub repositories. So one thing you might consider doing is adding a property for what type of project it is. And then you can maybe query GitHub for the list of repos that have that property. And then the Terraform can dynamically create those repositories for you based on you know, the data source selecting those repositories. I haven't confirmed that that data source supports properties, but I'd be curious to see. You're using GitHub? Yeah,
yeah, because GitHub and GitHub Actions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
a property is a GitHub feature of GitHub repos, GitHub Git repos.
It's a really new thing, so that's why I'm not necessarily sure if it's going to be supported.
Supported, you're saying by IAM, that an IAM policy could reference this property?
Well, in this case, I was talking about, so yeah, here you see this type. This is a custom property we added here, and then you can choose what type of repository is from a custom list that you populate.
Okay.
So then I'm wondering, let's see here, GitHub. Why is it not showing providers? So let's look at the data sources for this. Repositories query. Yeah, so you can specify an arbitrary query. So I assume there's a way to query by property. So that would let you then select all Lambda repositories, for example, and then you can automatically provision an ECR registry for each one of those Lambdas, provided you have the Terraform automation that would allow you to run on a basis.
I think you're missing one slight nuance to the question, Eric. I think from if I understand it correctly, is that you're actually saying like you want them to be able to create an ECR repo and delete an ECR repo that they can arbitrarily name.
Yes.
But only have certain repos be able to control, you know, delete ones that they haven't created, basically.
Right. And the sticky part is that the name is going to be arbitrary. You know, we don't know beforehand what engineers are going to name their new services or function or repos.
So you are totally Matt. You're totally right. I just kind of ignored that. I didn't ignore it accidentally. I ignored it being bullheaded. Elon Musk says something like, you know, the only laws are the laws of physics. And this goes true with the requirement. What's the requirement that those have to be arbitrary? And why are they arbitrary? We don't allow our customers to provision arbitrarily named repositories. It should follow a convention. Otherwise, it's a mishmash. And if you're starting from scratch now, and they brought you in as a consultant to do that, you should be telling them that they shouldn't have arbitrarily named repos. Arbitrary is a loaded word. What I mean by arbitrary is, you know, your repository is named FooBar. I called my repo, my ECR for some reason, Apple. Why is this called Apple and the service is called FooBar? You know, that's what I mean by arbitrary.
Yeah.
So there should be a correlation And however that correlation is programmatically, deterministically configured.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to name services, the names of services and the names of ECR repos and the names of GitHub repos and all those things are going to be cohered together. But like if an engineer wants to create a new service, and if the requirement is they should be able to create this new service without DevOps help, that means they might name the service, my org Fred service, or they might name it my org Jane service. And I don't know beforehand what they're gonna how to namespace IAM policies.
I think the idea behind it would be something like, however you're breaking up the repo, if the repo is like a team or whatever, let's say it's my org, service A team or whatever, or something
Core
that's not aligned
service.
with a service, some team name. You basically enforce a standard that has like the name of your ECR may be like my org dash team A dash anything arbitrary that you want. And then you can use IAM policies to make sure that that repo can only create things under the team A namespace, essentially. And then they can only delete things under the team A namespace, like as well in that case.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's helpful. Thanks. Sorry, it is. I this was kind of an unfair softball to lob because it's a very sort of fundamental like security issue. Like, how do you give someone a security policy that allows them to create a more restrictive security policy and then expect that to be a real security policy? It's kind of.
I mean, the other things you can get into if you get creative with some other ways is you could probably do something with tagging and then use a condition on the IAM policy to look at tags that are included in the condition, or use some other condition in the IAM policy for to determine those things. But that gets really dicey unless you come up with a scheme beforehand that makes sense and covers all of your requirements, as well as make sure that there's only a single intersection of all of the conditions that grant people access
Okay.
to the things that you want them to have access to.
Cool. Thank you. I appreciate all that advice.
Was just gonna. I personally didn't work on the workflow, so I'm struggling a little bit finding the right place for it. But conventionally, we do this thing where if this is our service, this is its unique identifier. You could never have two of those, right? And for the same reason, then we use that same thing in ECR, which is I think what Matt was proposing.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
But I just wanted to, I don't think it was, now that we've covered all of that, now I think it'll be more clear to explain what I was trying to say here is Matt.
No, go ahead.
Or I
Sorry, I
was
didn't
gonna,
mean to make us some.
yeah. So is that if you created a Terraform root module or component, as we call them, which queries now GitHub, if you wanted this to be fully automated and self-service, when you create a GitHub repository and you set its property to Lambda, for example, or ECR or whatever, or you add whatever properties this registry needs, then the data source can query for those repositories and take those actions on your behalf. Now, when that runs, either manually or through a cron job, would be depend on your implementation. That would be a way that they can act. They never need to contact your team to get that registry created. It happens automatically based on the logic.
Cool, thank you.
Although to be if they have control over their own repos, then you can easily get a privilege escalation if that runs in an automated fashion. You just change the property on your repo to something that you shouldn't have access to, and now you have access
I
to
think
those other things.
properties. Yeah, well, I mean, that's fair enough, but I mean, this gets down to like GitHub permissions, and not anyone can set properties
Oh
on.
no, that's what I'm saying though, is if you give them admin GitHub permissions to their own repo, they can do a privilege escalation to, it's an unintended consequence of that, out there from that perspective. The other thing I was going to say before is I was going to do a shameless plug of Null Label, Eric, and tell them maybe take a look at our GitHub Cloud Posse slash Terraform null label. And if you look at that module, that's a module to use to generate consistent naming conventions for all kinds of different things that you might want to create consistent naming conventions for. And we use that under the hood in all of our modules and components and things. So it will help you. You don't have to worry about creating a standard if you like our standard. So go look at it and take a look at how it
Is
could be used.
the naming convention dictated by null label configurable? Like if I want to have org dash component dash environment dash subcomponent, something like that?
Somewhat, yes. There are some keys that are kind of locked in and required, but future, not hopefully not too long in the future, we're doing some improvement to that so that it will be completely configurable. But today it is not completely configurable, but it is still flexible in that you can control the order, and you may just have to use some key names that don't exactly map to the same thing that you expect them to.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, so you can specify the order of those labels. It's opinionated right now on the fields like namespace, stage, name, tenant, attributes, and so forth. You can customize the limiter, so defaults to a dash, but all of that is overridable. This year, I would expect that you'll see a custom context available here so that you can specify absolutely anything, but that isn't yet in the works. Either way, whether you use null label or someone else's or create your own, I think the pattern has proven itself incredibly effective. And if you're starting from scratch, consider introducing that pattern.
Or and if you don't like everything that we have, fork this module and make it your own and use with your own keys, and then you'd be fine with that as well.
Okay. Thanks. I have to run to another meeting, but thanks everybody for all the feedback.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Hey, I have a quick question.
Hey, go for it.
Hopefully quick. So I've been I used Terraform about 4 or 5 years ago, and haven't done a lot with it since then. I've been doing mainly architecture work and leading a practice, and I've recently found myself back in the job market, and would like to brush up on my hands-on keyboard skills and in Terraform with create some pipelines and things and just build some nice little projects. Any recommendations on getting some training around building out infrastructure? I understand AWS very well from a technical aspect, but the deploying with Terraform and all of the newer features that have probably come out in the last, 4 years or something, is there a good like refresher that you could recommend or some projects to work on?
One thing I can definitely recommend, my former colleague Yevgeny Brickman has a book called Terraform Up and Running that he's upgraded at every version of Terraform, and it covers the latest the latest version. So the latest version of that book covers all the latest, so I guess it's the third edition is that one. That is actually a fantastic primer on everything Terraform. It takes you through from concepts of how it works at a very basic level all the way through very detailed examples and walkthroughs and that kind of thing. So it's a great book.
Okay, great. 'Cause I know back then it was rather clunky. I'm hoping that things are a little bit better now.
From 4 or 5 years
So
ago, it's improved by leaps and bounds. I mean, if you
yeah.
come at this from like a more traditional software background, I guess it's still pretty clunky. But it's proven itself to have staying power, and I think it's because it is an easier language for most people to get up and running that it's been successful. And maybe I have a sneaky suspicion that for the same reason WordPress was successful, it encouraged people hacking around and coming up with things. Terraform is successful because of its clunkiness, because it's fun to figure out the workarounds, but that's just a sneaky conspiracy theory.
No, hopefully it's more secure than
Yeah.
WordPress, though, right?
I mean, they're the pretty random comparison there. I just meaning
No,
that,
I know.
it's come a long way from its early days, and it's a pretty mature framework now, if you will, for a CMS, but still kind of looked down upon. And Terraform is looked down upon a little bit from a pure application developer standpoint, but it does the job. And I think, it remains to be seen, for example, where Pulumi is going to land in all of this. But Terraform is still going strong.
Okay, great. And then I hadn't heard about the licensing issues and things like that with Terraform versus OpenTofu, right? Is what you guys were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
So that sounds interesting that they're going to be doing some other things on the back end. So that'll be interesting to watch. But if I'm talking with people, about Terraform, that would be one issue to bring up, right? Stuff around licensing.
Possibly, but for the most part, everyone can continue. But again, I'm going to leave with, I am not a lawyer and do not take this as legal legal advice. The gist of it is the licensing changes were targeting companies that were using Terraform in a competitive fashion with Terraform Cloud or Terraform Enterprise, basically ways of delivering Terraform as a service. They didn't want that. So long as your future employer, your customers or clients are not trying to recreate Terraform Cloud or Terraform Enterprise, you're probably not going to have a problem. Again, consult with your lawyers. I sent a link to the FAQ, which is an important read if you want to get up to speed. It is a lengthy FAQ that answers all the most common concerns and questions there.
All
Also,
right.
no answer would be complete without a shameless plug. Matt's advice on starting with Terraform up and running is absolutely correct. And then I would say it's kind of like when you graduate from that and then you actually have to go and implement Terraform, for example, for an enterprise or any larger organization, there are a lot of other challenges that I don't believe are solved in the book from managing configuration at scale itself. So we solve a lot of that in a tool that we wrote called Atmos, and then we have our own thorough documentation on all these concepts of components and vendoring and validation and stacks and how to organize it. And then we also talk about design patterns and all the different architectural design patterns that we've used leveraging this tool. So this is like a tool for cloud architects that are also hands-on in designing what that architecture is going to look like. But it is definitely not the place to start. You have to get, brush up on the fundamentals and the problems that are inherent to Terraform before something like this is obvious.
Great. Perfect. Well, thank you.
My pleasure. All right. Any other questions we can get answered today? We got almost out of time. We got 3 more minutes. Any quick questions?
Yes, quick one. Artifactory, yay or nay?
My armchair take on it is as an open source product, we I've seen what's the alternative? Nexus come up more often. I don't. One of the biggest problems with hosting Artifactory yourself is now it's in the critical path of everything your developers are doing in your organization. Arguably one of the most expensive costs that your company has. And if your Artifactory goes down, now all development ceases to exist, production deployments stop, etc. So maybe consider hosted Artifactory if you go that route. Conceptually, I'm really surprised that Artifactory still remains like the only option out there. And I think it's something that is incredibly important for building software that is more and more dependent on open source. NPM projects that import, 5,000 packages in order to operate. And if any of those don't work or you can't pull it, you have a problem. So I like that idea from an idea of caching it all. I think it's sad that, from a Terraform perspective, that there's no good option for modules doing that. There is a provider. There's a concept of a provider mirror, but no concept of a Terraform mirror. I believe Artifactory solves some portion of that. Now, anyone else?
That's helpful if no one else has something to say. I've used it at a previous job and I had no issues. And someone was bringing it up. I'm at a startup now. And I was like, oh, that's a cool tool that I've forgotten about. It could be useful. But I'm wary of recommending things because then if they go bad, I'm the guy that's to blame. And so I went to do some research.